want to tell you guys about the last time I smoked pot. It was 11 and a half years ago, on Good Friday, 1993. I had been a Christ follower to one degree or another for about a decade, and an on-and-off pot smoker for a few years longer than that. Like Betty mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I didn't find the word marijuana in the Bible, so I figured no harm, no foul. And just kind of considered it Michael's little helper. I knew it was something I should probably quit. I just didn't want to. So Good Friday, 1993, my wife and I had the day off work, and we went over to her brother's apartment. And we were hanging out, the three of us, and smoking a little bit and having a good time. I remember we watched some Ren and Stimpy cartoons, which were hysterically funny for some reason. And then her brother put in a videotape of some music videos that he had. And the first one on there was a video by an artist of whom I had been a big fan for a long time and still am a big fan. And I had heard the song but had not seen the video. So the three of us are watching it, and it looks pretty cool. And while we're watching it, I had my first and only ever full-on panic attack. And my heart was racing, and I was sweating, and I thought I was going to die. I was really terrified. This was my perception, that God was speaking to me through the lyrics of that song. This was my perception, that God had his index finger, his very large and forceful index finger, planted in the center of my chest and was saying to me, "This time you've gone too far. You are done. You don't do this anymore. I'm drawing a line in the sand here, and this line you don't cross. You do this again, and you're going to lose something very important to you." What it was that I might lose was not specified, and I wasn't really worried about that at the moment. Mostly what I was worried about was not dying. So my wife and her brother experienced no ill effects from watching the video, but my ill effects were enough for everyone, and I pretty much killed that party. And my wife can tell you that I was no picnic to be around for the rest of that day. I was really flipped out, and it took me a long time to calm down. But I did calm down and eventually became convinced that I was not going to die, and became less than convinced that it was actually God that had spoken to me, and felt a little bit like a cliche, like, you know, guy gets stoned and hears the voice of God. Sort of like a Cheech and Chong record. But I knew I was done. I knew I was ready to put that behind me. And I didn't want to have anything to do with it anymore. On the one hand, if it was just me having a reaction to the drug, then that's it. I don't want to invite that occasion again. And on the other hand, if it really was God that had spoken to me, well, that seals that. So the next day I was a little more calmed down. Felt better. And the day after that, I felt great. I was ready to put it behind me, ready to seal the deal, and I wanted to get some accountability on it. It was Easter Sunday, and Heidi and I went to church, and after the service, I grabbed my friend Dave, and I said, "Dave, this this pot-smoking thing has been lingering in my life a little bit, and I want to stop. I need to stop, and I'm ready to stop. Will you pray for me?" And that's all I said to him. I didn't say anything about the song or my reaction to it, and I certainly didn't say anything about hearing the voice of God through a music video. So Dave said, "Sure, man, I'll pray for you." So we bowed our heads, and he put his hand on my shoulder and started to pray for me. He prayed for a minute or two. And somewhere in that prayer, unbeknownst to him, he quoted a line from that song that I had been listening to and watching in that music video. And I mean to tell you that every hair on the back of my neck stood straight up, and I felt a rush of that same terror that I had felt 2 days before and I felt that same presence pressing in on me. And because this was no longer my little subjective thing, this was an objective evidence of something outside coming inside and saying to me, that's right, it was me, you weren't making it up. I said that to you so forcefully because I love you and because I'm not kidding around.
Thanks, Mike, for being so bold. You know, the other amazing thing about that is we've had that song planned for weeks and weeks and weeks, and the person who we were planning on doing it canceled, and so we called Mike at the last minute to do that song, never understanding there was going to be any connection to that, let alone that we were planning our support people to use graphics, the same graphics that God used to kind of hit him that day. So, Mike, thanks for being part of God's story, man. Give him another hand. Let's pray. God, thank you for what you do in people's lives. Not all of us have a miraculous experience like Mike had, but many of us have. Many of us would like to have one of those. Maybe you're going to give us one of those today. Maybe you're not. But we just do want to ask you to do in us what only you can do today and help us to understand this whole thing of addiction. And I pray these things in your Son's name. Amen. Well, we've been dealing with this definition for addiction through the whole series. An addiction, as we're defining it, is any repeated choice that results in something having control over us. Any repeated choice. Reading Men's Health this last week, and I came across one of those articles that completely fired me up. I was so excited. Here's what it says. For decades, studies have attempted to find links between caffeine intake and a host of heavy-duty ailments from heart disease to cancer, but no luck. I said, yes, that's what I like to read about Men's Health. You know, they actually cited three studies in here that have shown that caffeine, coffee, if it's got anything that does bad to you, haven't found it yet. That's the latest studies. Of course, I think that the researchers purposely have studies that give the opposite stuff from the previous study, just so they can keep making a living. But anyway, they quote the New England Journal of Medicine, a bunch of others in here. So I could say to myself, wow. Hey, no problem having caffeine. I'm going to keep having my same four cups a morning or so that I do every morning. But I got to ask myself, even if that isn't really doing physical harm to me, is it controlling me? Am I dependent on having the caffeine in order to get my day off on the right path? So from time to time, I'll have to say, all right, we're going to stop right now. We're going to stop and just say, am I addicted? Am I depending on a substance or on something to get me to do something that I can't do in and of my power? And that way, am I under the control and influence of that thing? And one of the things that some people might think is if you really get serious with Christ, you're going to lose all desire. If you really get serious with God, you're going to lose all desire. No, that's not the way it works. Last week I talked about the fact that there's good in all spiritualities, all religions, but there's also vast, vast differences. You go to some of the Eastern mysticism or Eastern religions, you'll find that desire is something that is bad. Desire is bad. The whole purpose of Buddhism is to stamp out all your desires. And what happens when you stamp out all desires so you have no desires? You attain nirvana. You attain nirvana. And so in those spiritual systems, the goal of life is to not have any desire. That's not the God of the Bible's desire for you. His desire for you is to have desire, to enjoy reality, to enjoy what's happening. But for the biggest thing for you to desire, be Him and not the thing that's controlling us. Today's going to be a note-taker's dream. If you like to take notes, this is going to be a dream for you. If you don't want to take notes, don't worry about it. But I got seven R's for you today. Yes, seven R's. And this is all about getting to a different state, getting to a different place. How do you get to a state of not being in bondage? Well, the first thing you got to do is you got to recognize reality. Recognize reality. Am I addicted to caffeine? Am I addicted to whatever? Does something have a control over me? We know about 12-step programs, and those can be very, very helpful, are very, very helpful. I think there's 12 steps to addiction, and if these aren't sequential, there's 12 items, the more of which that you have, the more likely it is that you are addicted. One of those steps is genes, your genetic disposition, your genetic predisposition. There is no specific scientific study that's proven that alcoholism is linked to genes, but a lot of people are wondering, a lot of people think, well, at some point we're going to find that. And we talked about the brain last week. It's very likely that in our brains that were created and we got handed down to us in large part from our parents, both of our parents gave us 23,000 chromosomes each, that somebody may have passed on a tainted chromosome, a tainted gene, and some of us might just be more disposed to destructive behavior than others. Another step is our family of origin. The places that we lived. You're laughing about this. Have a whack. Oh, the whack part. Okay, yeah. So having a whack. Well, you know, just because you have a family of origin doesn't know if you got there to be whacked. You know, so you're in an environment where for an extensive amount of time, day in, day out, you're getting messages that might be a harmful message and might alter who you are. Or if it's not that regular onslaught, a single traumatic experience. Could be something like a rape. Abuse, an unbelievable fear that came known to you, and you have to medicate that somehow through some activity, through something. Another step is just making innocent choices. Innocent choices. Something that is not bad, something that is very innocent, but it is a regular, repeated innocent choice that eventually could get a hold of you. And just an innocent thing got out of control. So it happens with prescription drugs, very innocent thing, gets out of control. It can be some of us who have a leadership position, a very innocent thing to continual offer feedback. And then before you know it, you need to be seen as the woman or the man who has the answers and can't allow any opinion to exist other than yours. It's repeated, regular choices that get a hold of you. And then what happens is then you can't be critical of yourself. You're completely unself-aware. You don't know yourself. And you can't see yourself the way you are. It's another step. And then finally, when this starts to happen and things escalate, and then everybody else is the problem. The whole world's the problem. We don't see any of our faults. The whole world's the problem, not me. And nobody's bonding to me in the world, so I start bonding to things I can buy or things that I contain. And then I keep it very secretive because I start to get a little embarrassed about it. And many times in the Christian church, we've tried to keep anything from becoming a problem by just saying, well, don't do anything. Never play cards. Never dance. Never do anything. In the history of the Christian church, there's been some really weird, weird things. A friend of mine who grew up in pastor church in the South, same age as I, started the Crossroads and church he pastored about the same time, and in their church, similar to ours, just took off like a rocket. And he had all the accoutrements of success that came along with it. He got book deals. He was getting speaking deals, all that kind of stuff. Everything was fine until one day his wife had to call the police on him because he had this secret thing of alcohol. Because in their society, if you were a Christian, you could not drink. So you couldn't tell anybody what you were doing. And this secret thing got a hold of him. And it's something he's yet to recover from. And then we hurt ourselves. We hurt people around us. And then this thing becomes our identity. It's like we're a card-carrying whatever. It's who we are. We can't imagine ourselves without being a gossiper. We can't imagine ourselves without the accolades that we're addicted to. We can't imagine ourselves without the bottle. And then we realize something's wrong, but we can't even keep our own promises to ourselves. Our yeses become nos. Our nos become yeses. We say, okay, I'm going to keep out of coffee for 4 days, and we can't even go 2 days. And we get in this cycle until finally we come to this place where we are shackled, we are controlled, and we have no place to go. This is the cycle that comes with addiction. These are the things that all of us can relate to on one level or not. I think the 12-step programs are fantastic. I think they're awesome programs. AA, all that stuff, I think it's great. You know, a little history about AA you might not know, or 12-step programs. It was actually started by a couple guys who were hardcore Christ followers that saw people in their life and themselves that had problems with addictions. And they actually leaned into a guy by the name of Sam Shoemaker. Sam Shoemaker came from the town I came from, Pittsburgh. He was the rector of Episcopal Church, big Episcopal church there in Pittsburgh, and actually had a profound impact on a guy who has really had a profound impact on me. And Sam Shoemaker helped these guys bring scriptural principles and to communicate them in a healthy way. Is they tried to help people with addictions. And I'm going to talk today not about 12-step stuff. In fact, some of the stuff I'm going to say today might sound contrary to 12-step stuff. Anybody's been through 12-step stuff. But It's truth nonetheless, and God uses various means. But the thing we've got to do is come to a place where we can recognize reality. And then God does some stuff, or can do some things, that we can't do in and of our own. In the book of Ephesians, we started looking at this last week. I'm going to go back to this passage and kind of finish off some steps here. Verse 21, surely you heard of him and were taught in him in accordance with the truth that is in Jesus. Surely you've heard of the spiritual power that's available through Jesus. Relinquish control. Relinquish control. In 12 Steps programs, we'll talk about a higher power. And if you can find some higher power or thought of a higher power to help you, great. But I want to tell you who the higher power is. Let me introduce you to Jesus is his name. That is the highest power above all names. The power that brings real spiritual authority that has set people free for generation after generation after generation. And the Apostle Paul, in speaking to people like us, says, man, understand that there is unbelievable power in who Jesus is. Abraham Lincoln made a declaration called the Emancipation Proclamation during the Civil War that set the slaves free. Of course, politically speaking, he didn't necessarily do it for the slaves in the North. That's another story altogether. But as he set that Emancipation Proclamation, the very clear message is, if you are a slave in the South, you are free. That was what was proclaimed. However, it took quite some time until the slaves actually walked in the midst of their freedom. However, they were declared free. The highest authority in the land, the Union, had declared, you are free. It took a while until they felt it and acted on it, but that was the declaration. And Jesus, the whole point of the life of Jesus is to come and unshackle you and to heal you and to give you spiritual power that you can't do in and of your own, because he cares for you and he loves you that much. I was playing Texas Hold'em last week, as I mentioned. I've watched it too on television every once in a while. Texas Hold'em is, you know, this card game. And I'd never played it before, so these guys were trying to teach me how to play Texas Hold'em. I learned this. There's this one phrase, if you've ever played Texas Hold'em, it's kind of the ultimate phrase. What is it, for those of you who played Texas Hold'em? What is the ultimate? All in, that's it. All in is when you take the rest of whatever you have, and you just go all in, and everyone around the table is going to go, ugh! And at that moment, either you lose it all, or you, like, are on the road to winning. All in. A lot of people think and struggle with relationship with God because they just want to kind of keep all of their own stuff and just add God to their life. And this is not the life that Jesus offers. He wants us to relinquish control to him. Not just recognize him as a nice spiritual path, but relinquish control and say, all in. All in. I put all of myself in. I don't understand what that means, God. I don't understand what that might mean tomorrow. But all in, I put myself in your spiritual power and say, whatever you are doing, whatever you want me to be about, I'm fine with that. Harry Houdini, greatest escape artist of all time. There's only one time he had a hard time escaping. And that was they took him to a jail. They put him in a prison after they kind of locked him all up with chains, some of those chains that are up there. He got through the chains very, very quickly. And then he went to work on the lock, trying to pick the lock with a little thing that he had hidden on him. And he couldn't pick it. He worked at it and worked at it. And he started sweating profusely and worked and worked. An hour went by and he collapsed, just giving up. And as he collapsed, he leaned against the gate and the gate opened. It had never been locked. And this is similar to what it's like with the power of Christ. When Christ comes into your heart, and he comes into your life, and you relinquish control, things are unlocked. Things are unlocked, and it's just a matter of leaning in. Come to a place where we want to relinquish control. And then part of that also means that we renounce and call out by name the things that have had us in bondage. We renounce what the Bible would call sin in our life. You were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. We talked about this last week. The infinitive. For infinity. I recognize all things in my old self that are not right, and I put them off, and I recognize all the great things that God is, and I try to put those on and make those part of my character qualities and rest in those things. And I keep doing it over and over and over again, over and over and over and over again. When I was at my parents' timeshare at the Marriott down in Hilton Head over my study break for a week. I would go to this one place and I would read my Bible in the morning and pray and kind of journal and all that stuff. Same place, same time, every day. Same place, same time as I was there. There was a manager from the Marriott who would walk by, stroll by just like this, just looking around, and he'd see a little piece of paper. He'd bend down, pick up the paper, he'd throw it away. He'd see some pine needles that were nestling over on the sidewalk. He'd kind of kick them away. Every day, he walked through, he had a head on a swivel of everything that was not right under his domain. And this is what you do when you've renounced stuff and you've given your life over to Christ. Is you renounce, you categorize, what are the things that are going on in my life that I need to call out by name and say, that cannot happen anymore. I cannot have that as a part of my life. And you renounce it. You call it out. You stop. But also at the same time, you realize that when you do that, it's very, very difficult to do this on your own. It's very difficult to be able to rest on your own understanding and what your own eye sees in the sidewalk as you walk around. That's why I think this next verse is so important for us. Therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbor, for we are all members of one body. This talks about the falsehood that's over us. Falsehood is a falsehood that is over us. A falsehood that's over us, that darkens our understanding, that darkens our spirits, it casts a shadow throughout our entire life. It is the falsehood that confuses, it's a falsehood that keeps us from seeing properly, it darkens us, it keeps us cold. And what this passage says is that we need other people to speak truthfully to us, to take their flashlight and stick their flashlight up under our falsehood of truth and illumine us, to help us to see, oh man, this is not a good thing in my life. This idea that I always say bad things about other people. I don't even notice, but someone's just made me aware of that. Ooh, oh man, this thing that I've always got to make sure that I've got the coolest car, and I've never even noticed that. I've got to have that. Oh, this thing of I've always got to brag about my exploits and just make sure I have a pep rally for myself all the time. And I don't even know that I'm throwing a pep rally for myself, but somebody makes me alert to that because I've lost the ability to be self-aware, to be aware of myself. Interesting. Mike had his story about that song and how God just used a unique situation. I think a lot of people use really strange... A lot of people see things that are mere coincidence and they pass it off on God. I believe that. Maybe I had a mere coincidence last week, but I don't think so. I had this idea of doing the 12 steps. 12-step, you know, kind of this whole thing. And so I was going to have some people maybe build 12 steps. And then I had this thought, oh, wait a minute, there's this old ladder from HQ, and this used to be HQ. I wonder if we find that. And that's what this thing is. And I said, what, 12 steps. 1, 2, 3, 12 steps, perfectly. I don't know if God designed that way back when, but perfect, works for me. And then even got better as I thought about it, because there was a defining moment in somebody's life in our church that happened around this ladder. There's a guy who, at the event where we came together 4 years ago, however many years ago that was, we came together to actually make commitments of what God would have us to do to create this place, a place for our friends. He wasn't able to be there because he was in a drunken binge and left his wife alone. And his wife had to go to this commitment event, celebration event, not having any sense of celebration at all. Having no idea where her husband was. And this man who had this all part of his story, what God was doing in his life, brought him to a place of healing. Great things happening in his life through other people, and to a place where he wanted to help other people in our church who might have other addictions. And I want to just introduce, if I could, Rick Hensley. Rick, come on up here on our stage. Rick is... Thanks, man. Have a seat, Rick. I'm going to sit back. I just wanted to, it would be bad for me to even talk a little bit about that without you talking about this group you're starting for people with a kind of big five. You want to describe that and anything else you can say? Chair is yours.
Thanks. Thanks for that great introduction, too, by the way. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk about our community group, and we're really, really excited about this group. There's been about 10 of us that have been working since early August to put this whole thing together, and It's a chance for us, of those of us that share these same kinds of addictions, maybe addictions that you're sitting there tonight thinking about, you know, do I need to learn more about these addictions? And so we put together this community group, and I would just encourage any of you that are thinking that to sign up for this. You can sign up in the lobby, or you can use the website as well. And I think the great thing about the community group is that it's made up of people that are dealing with these addictions every day. We have people that are in GA, NAAA, and so we're going to share our experience, strength, and hope with you, okay? And then secondly, we hope that we're going to give you some tools, both spiritual tools and AA, NA type of tools that you can walk away with and put those into your life. And hopefully, if you do have an addiction, you can begin to build a recovery program, the kind of recovery program that saved my life. And then finally, it's a safe environment. It's a loving environment. It's an environment of hope. And you can feel secure there. There's anonymity there. And again, just encourage all of you that if you're feeling that that repetitive choice that Brian's talked about that has control over you, please sign up and be part of our community group.
Thank you, Rex. That's awesome. Thank you. You know, a couple things about that. First of all, this is not for people who just like, I have a friend who might struggle with that. If you're thinking that you might have a problem with alcohol, drugs, sex, eating, or gambling, if you think you might, maybe you don't, but if you think you might, this is something for you. And by the way, the reason we're doing those big five is there's unique issues and challenges with those five addictions that aren't present with some other addictions. And the experts have just said this needs to be a safe place for people wrestling with those five addictions as opposed to some of the other ones that many of us deal with. So check that out. It could be great for you. So relate to other strugglers. This is what you'll be doing. This is what part of what helped Rick become healthy is you relate to other people that are struggling, because we can't do this on our own. We put off falsehood, shine light, and this brings us to the next place where we should be, which is resisting urges. Look at the next verse, resisting urges. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. You know, this whole passage isn't about addictions per se, but anger is definitely addiction. Actually, any emotion can be an addiction. Any emotion you repetitively have, emotion of depression, emotion of anger, emotion of happy, happy, joy, joy, emotion of anything is something you are depending upon. You're allowing that emotion to control you without experiencing the full bandwidth of emotions. And here we have a person who is addicted to anger. And you know what's interesting about what it says? It says to resist this and to not give the devil, not to give the evil one a foothold. The evil one, the devil, Satan, Lucifer, any name you want to give him. He uses the exact same strategy that we used in World War II. World War II, the strategy was this. In taking over islands, first you soften through air attacks. You soften through air attacks. And the second thing is you establish a beachhead. You establish a foothold. And the third thing is you get supreme dominance as a result of that. And this is what all of us are dealing with. Every day you're being bombarded with something that is trying to soften your senses. Oh, I can handle that much alcohol. Oh, you know, it's just a little emotion. Oh, it's just my tongue. That's just the way I am. Oh, it's just another purchase. It's just one. And we have these things that are constantly pelting us, and we keep trying to explain them away, but we're getting softened. And then once a foothold happens, once there's a tangible thing where there's a foothold, it permeates from there, and we lose ourselves, and we become completely under the control of the very thing that could have been innocent, but it's no longer innocent. And every time you resist, every time you resist, you get stronger. Now, the only unfortunate thing is when you're dealing with an addiction, resisting purely with willpower is like, you know, using willpower against diarrhea. It doesn't really work all that much. I mean, you can try it to a point, but, you know, and that's not my line. That's an old-fashioned addiction line. It's true. You know, you come to the point we need to resist, and we can get stronger resisting, but there's a limit to willpower. There is. And that's why the very next verse gives us another little case scenario. It says this: he who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work, doing something useful with his own hands that he may have something to share with those in need. So here we have somebody who has some sort of financial addiction, or they have a stealing addiction. They're under the control of continuing to steal. And does it say, hey, stop stealing? No, what it says is there must be a prescription. There must be a recipe. There must be a recipe for health. A recipe. You must create a recipe to get yourself whole. And this person's recipe is, hey, if you're stealing and stealing and stealing, here's what you're going to do. Get a job. Get a J-O-B. Work. And why would you work with your own hands? You work with your own hands. All of a sudden your hands have something to do as opposed to stealing. And you have something to share with those in need. Whatever addiction you have, whatever you have that could be an addiction, there is a recipe to come against it. Stealing money. You know, I've counseled so many people because I had a money or a debt addiction, if you will, years and years and years ago. And I counseled people, talked to people, and everybody who's in debt, everybody who spent their way there, the big question is, okay, does God not want me to give? I call myself a Christ follower. I read the Bible. I hear this thing about 10%, give 10% away. But God doesn't want me to tithe, or he wants me to pay off my debts. No. No. It's actually one of the recipes for you is to trust in God if you call yourself a Christ follower. Because there's something in the spiritual world that breaks when you stop spending money on yourself and you actually start spending it and trying to bless other people. It's a prescription. We had to move with my parents or Libby's parents. That was something we had to make sure we did because it was breaking the thing. Gossip. You got a problem with gossip? You can't just say, I'm not going to gossip anymore. What you do is you say, I'm going to go on a 24-hour silent fast. I'm not going to say anything for 24 hours. I'm going to go through my life. And every time I want to say something, I'm just going to stop. I'm going to think, why do I want to say something? And I'm going to pray, God, help me to be a better person whenever I do speak. Any addiction has a recipe. Who wants to give me one? I'll give you an example right now. Come on, try me. Name one. No addictions in here. Come on, someone name one. Let's say you would say fear. I know someone had a fear addiction. Addiction fear. You know what they did? They went skydiving. They booked a plane and they did the sky. Because they knew if they could do that, they could convince themselves they could do anything. Give me another one. Come on. Anger. What might you do if you have an anger addiction? What might you do? If you're angry, you're probably angry with other people, right? And so what might you do? You might want to do the opposite. Write encouragement notes to other people. Write a note of encouragement. Force yourself every time you feel angry about something. And if it's a driver you don't know, write an encouragement note to the Department of Transportation. Dear whoever answers this letter. I applaud traffic lights and even people who don't honor them or something like that. Recipe creation. I want to invite the band to come up. Because I want to talk about the last one. And I want them to help me out with this one. This is something that Jesus did that was just what only Jesus could do. And he did this stuff all the time. He did it so regularly. And by the way, last week, I had somebody come up to me afterwards and said they had an addiction of negativity. They thought they weren't going to get anything out of this series. And they realized that they were addicted to negativity. And they had prayer a couple weeks ago. And they said, I've never gone a whole week without negativity like I have. There was some spiritual breaking that happened. And we're going to have the opportunity to have that happen again tonight, if you'd like, where you're going to be able to have somebody just put their hand on you and pray for you. Sometimes we need people with skin on, as opposed to just this abstract thought of who God is. One of my favorite stories, Jesus, a man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, if you're willing, you can make me clean. Filled with compassion, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I'm willing, he said. Be clean. Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cured. This person felt immediate freedom, immediate deliverance from the thing that had him in bondage. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes it doesn't happen. Sometimes it's a much more disciplined 12-step type of approach. But even here, we see something else. It's important for you to understand all the things I've read about Jesus, all the things I've read about what he said. I don't recall Jesus ever calling somebody a leper. This person here, a man with leprosy, it is an entirely different thing to have your identity be, I am an alcoholic, versus, I'm a child of God who is struggling with alcoholism. And this can't be said of everybody because that might not be your identity. Your identity still might be in your alcoholism because you may have never gone all in with Jesus. It grieves me when those of us who have a relationship with Christ are not willing to rest in their new identity. Rest in your new identity. When I know somebody who has cancer, I would never want to hear somebody say, I am cancer. That's who I am. I am cancer. No, you are not cancer. You're a child of God that struggles with an awful physical affliction called cancer. We need to rest in our new identity. Let's stand together right now. God, as we sing this song, or as we pray this prayer, pray that you'd hear our hearts and heal our hearts. We're going to have some people with the prayer ministry who are going to be standing up here. If you're here, I'd go ahead and ask you to come down front right now if you'd like. And we're going to do this song all the way through. And there might just be something in your heart that's prompting you, that for every reason that you need to call out yourself. Come down and have someone just put their hand on your shoulder. Just pray on you. You don't have to say anything. In fact, I prefer you don't say anything. It's going to be hard for you talking with the music. Just come down and be still. And see if there's a touch of healing that might actually happen in somebody here. And if not, if you don't want to do that, that's fantastic. Last thing we ever want to do around here is have some sort of spiritual exercise for church sake. Please, don't come down if that's anything you feel pressure to do. But many of us, there's this internal thing. God might be saying, this is your time. It's your time to be set free. To be on the journey. God, for all of us who stand singing this song, I pray that you would bring a level of healing to us. For those of us who come forward and ask people to pray on us, pray you do what only you can do right now. Hear the hearts of children in this room. God, thank you for the courage of those who would stand in line to be prayed on. Set them free. Set all of us free who've asked you to set us free, and we're standing where we are. Set us free from our need for anything, whether it be caffeine, our need for alcohol, our need for affirmation, our need for control, our need for money, our need for recognition, our need for accolades, our need for promotions, our need for plaques, our need to be known that we are the man, we are the woman, our need to have an anger rush, our need to have a depression rush, our need to have all attention on us, our need to be the perfect athlete, our need to have body beautiful, our need to always have an endorphin rush, our need to be negative, our need to gossip, our need to pull other people down instead of lifting them up. All these things. And legion of others, legions and legions and legions and legions of these things are like chains that shackle us. Set us free, God. Please set us free. I pray these things in the name of Jesus. Amen. Okay, people, we're going to be still offering prayer. If you still want to come down, see you next week. We'll close out this series, or at Next Level this week. We'll see you then. See you Wednesday.